Buying a car can be a stressful experience, but TrueCar is changing car buying forever. Every day, TrueCar.com users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Some features not available in all states. In the first 6 months of this year, over 275,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three steps. Go to TrueCar.com, find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for, then register at TrueCar.com to see the upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. And the third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Every day, TrueCar.com users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the TrueCar mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com. Hey, kiddies, I got yet another podcast for you guys. It's called Take a Knee. I speak to luminaries and captains of industry and celebrities about how they got from where they got to where they got to get. And we discuss what's wrong with my grammar. I know you're going to love it, and I know you'll be motivated by it. AdamCarolla.com/archive, or you can check it out on our app. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
This is Corolla Digital. Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on mandate. Get it on. And welcome to another Adam and Drewski Show.
Happy New Year, more importantly.
Yeah, man. That? Good to see you.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. Las Vegas Hard Rock, Saturday, January 17th, 7 and 9:30. Penn Jillette, there's a substantial guy. And I watched the documentary, by the way.
Oh, you like it?
Yeah, we'll get into it in a second. Jeff Dunham, not substantial, but his dolls are super substantial. Jeff Dunham is one of these guys that is one of the most. Are you having a problem here, Drew?
Getting some paper. Relax.
Yeah, always make your move after the mic's heat up. That's the rule.
When the host get here on time and have time to set up, it's all good.
All right. So there's no possible way you could have had that time to set up.
Okay. Too busy responding to the boss.
All right. Now. Dunham is one of the most successful stand-up acts, Vegas acts, comedy acts in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
I remember
helicopters.
You and I were in Salt Lake City, and remember there were big billboards for his thing, and we got, you know, 1,500 seater or something, and he was selling out 25,000 seats.
I remember when, I can't remember if it was my book, I was an audio book or something like that, but I'd go check the iTunes top rankings, you know, to see how it was doing, and Jeff Dunham's 28 comedy specials were 1 through 28, and then my book would pop up, and that was in the first week it was out. So Dunham will be there, and Penn Jillette, which is, let's see, so we had Vermeer. Is that the...
Tim's Vermeer.
We'll get into that in a second. If you want to support the show, we'll keep the pirate ship going. Hit the Amazon banner at AdamAndDrDrewShow.com and help keep the pirate ship afloat. Click the PayPal button and subscribe and all that good stuff. Vermeer.
Let me just say, you and I have a shitload to talk about.
Yes.
It's a whole new year. We saw each other across the vacation.
We did.
We got stories. All right. So go ahead. Tim's Vermeer.
I don't want to burden everybody with the details of the story. All I can say is you meet some people and you sort of see their resume. And it's that kind of thing where they go, it starts off with, I was tired of pushing my lawnmower, so I wanted to build one that did it for me.
Right.
And you go,
that's not this story.
You go, what? Well, this is how these stories start. because they were 14. So they went to the garage.
Right.
And they started taking stuff apart. And the next thing you know, they had a lawnmower that was self-operated.
Right.
You know, and then next thing you know, there was a patent for it and blah, blah, blah.
And now they're 17.
And then they moved on to, but it starts with a curiosity or a something's not working right or I'm tired of. Whatever it is.
I should be able to fix this.
Yeah. And even if the product is made by GM or Sony, they still find faults in it and go, what do we do? Let's do a better one of these.
Yeah.
You know, and it gets all the way up to rocket ships. But at a certain point, it starts off with curiosity. And these guys know nothing in this department, but because they've chased their curiosity so many times, they become mixed martial artists. You know, people say to me like all the time, hey, well, have you ever built a studio? And I go, no, I've never built a studio. Well, how are you going to build a studio? I go, I've built 1,000 things. The studio falls somewhere in between that.
Do you remember I told you that's why you would like this film?
Yeah.
Because it's very similar to some of the can-do stuff you've always talked about. How you do a documentary? Well, you just go do it. You figure it out along the way.
Well, no, yeah. That's the way I do feel about a documentary, but from a guy who's done a scripted variety type show, many pilots, Love Line, home improvement shows. Once you've done a bunch of
where'd you learn to do those things? How do you figure that out?
But you don't start. What I'm saying is I didn't start by going, I'm going to write and direct a romantic comedy that's 90 minutes long. I started doing 3-minute vignettes on The Man Show.
Right.
And then as you start to see how that works, you start to expand it into other things, right, and those muscles get stronger, and the next thing you know, you're doing something that's more substantial. Right. And for these guys, first off, impossible is just a challenge.
Yeah.
That's you daring them to try it. That means nothing to them. And
by the way, what I liked about this guy is with that kind of seeing things that seem impossible are not like doesn't get angry that he's being challenged. He sort of looks at it like amusement. Like, I'll think about that.
Well, so he takes – he's basically taking a painting from, I don't know, the Dutch masters somewhere in the 17-whatevers and doing something that people think's impossible, which is recreating it.
Well,
Everyone's ever figured it out.
Right. Everyone's always thought how his paintings were done were impossible. They just forget, do it the way he did it by non-painter. Guy's never held a brush.
Well.
Never held a brush.
How about a weenie roller? How about you hold your weenie roller and let me talk, old man? Here's what I'm saying. Never holding a brush worked for him.
Yes.
Because he didn't approach it like an artist. He approached it like a scientist.
Yeah.
And he broke it down. And also, delayed gratification and the ability to be able to break everything down in bite-sized morsels. Just go, how do we start? I've always say, you could eat a Buick if it was ground down into a powder.
Yeah.
And every day you sprinkled 1 teaspoon over your cereal in 28 years.
You'd eat the Buick.
You would have eaten a Buick.
Yeah, yeah.
So don't tell me you can't eat a Buick.
No, it's called an insurmountable task. Did we talk about this at the end of the year? I think we did, which is that people that have faced insurmountable tasks and then completed them come away with that sense that, well, it's just about the first brick in the wall.
You want to talk about that kind of thing. So Tim's Vermeer, which is a documentary that Penn Jillette or Penn and Teller actually did together.
Oh, I thought it was just Penn and Teller was in there a little bit.
Teller was in there a little bit. Yeah, they did it together. Either way, it's worth a watch for you, but it's more worth a watch for your teenager.
Yeah.
You know, get your 14-year-old to sit down and go, come on. Don't tell me you can't fucking finish putting that shit together.
And there were two or three things that stood out for me. One is Vermeer's always been one of my very famous favorite painters. And I've stood in front of nine of those Vermeers and gone, how the fuck did he do this? Like literally just wonder. All I have is wonderment, not let's figure this out. I just like, how is this possible? How did any human do this was always my reaction to his paintings.
Right. As opposed to whatever modern piece of shit there is where you kind of go, I guess the guy got pretty high.
And number two,
looks like, Andy Warhol got really high and fell into some acrylics. I guess so. Yeah. When you see Vermeer, you go, oh, fuck.
How does anybody do this?
And well, the thing about Vermeer, and I don't know if you're this way, but this is the way I am artistically. The further away you can get from me, the more I appreciate it.
Sure. Yeah, I'm that way. But this guy broke it down as a video computer specialist. And anyway, so the other thing that jumped out at me about this, here he is recreating a Vermeer. I'm like, oh Jesus, that's too much. Then he has to recreate the scene in which he's painting because it's not available to him. It's not the furniture.
Yeah.
He builds the furniture, having never built furniture before.
Right.
And literally has to design new lathe equipment in the process. To me, that was like, what?
Well, that was almost more magical than anything. Blacksmithy stuff. But the thing that was interesting about it is here's the guy who founded the company that makes the TriCaster. And
is that right? Is that who he is?
Yeah. And he's a tech guy, and he's getting out the tong and hammer and blacksmith stuff and making, modifying his lathe because it couldn't handle.
But again, never made furniture before, and yet doing masterwork with the furniture. I mean, it's
But Drew.
Adam. Dig.
See, you come at this from a slightly different place because you come at it from a place of education.
Training, right.
And training and specialties.
Yeah, yeah.
I just look at your brain as one huge computer. And you go, well, he's never. Yeah, but he's done stuff that's so much more complicated and advanced than taking his lathe.
Yes.
His lathe had
brain, though, but this is a hand-eye thing.
Hold on. His lathe had a capacity to go up to about 5 inches, essentially make a baseball bat that was 5 inches wide, and he needed one that was 6 inches wide. Yeah. So he had to cut it in half.
The lathe. Basically. Cut the lathe in half.
Yeah, but you got to understand.
How did he know it would work after you cut it broken in half?
Listen, you understand. I understand what he's coming from, which is when I put a car in my house temporarily.
Yeah, I remember.
And people say to me all the time, oh, what are you gonna do? And I go, I put a car in my house. And they go, yeah, but what about this? I go, put a car in my house.
Wait, you put a car elevator in your office. Let's stay either way.
I'll figure this one out. This is a two.
Yeah.
The car was an 8.5.
Yeah.
This will be fine. I'll figure it out. There's no problem. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So when you have that brain, and I'm not saying I'm a genius. What I'm saying is when you've done things that are quite a bit more difficult than this.
I agree.
Even if it's not your specialty.
I get it.
It's still quite a bit easier than what you've done. Now, I agree there's certain things like I can't weave a basket. And it's not like, well, weaving a basket is easy. You put a car in it. Now, that's a repetitive.
And see, to me, some of that lathe work and stuff goes in that same category as basket weaving. I guess it isn't.
No, but, not but really. Head, it's just an engineering thing
right, in his mind.
He sees it. He sees what the problem is.
And what his deal is, how do I create the tools to get me to do this?
And I
get that. But it's still sort of magical. But speaking of brain power and no-brainer, stamps.com, baby.
Oh, man.
That's right. It's new year.
You'd be a fool.
Should have resolutions. And part of that should be to maximize every minute, every dollar of your small business. You can do that with stamps.com. So people have been Twittering me. They've got their faces on their stamps and stuff. It's very cool.
Oh, yeah.
Do not waste time at the post office. Do not lease a money postage. Don't spend money leasing a postage meter. Use your own computer. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package. Been using stamps.com for many years. I don't like the post office. I love the post office service. I love the people that work there. I don't like going there. And you don't have to. And they don't want you to go there.
Weird vinyl tile.
They don't want you to go there because it's busy and there's no needs for it because now you can do it from your computer. And we have a special offer. Right now, use our promo code ADS, no risk trial. $110 bonus offer includes a digital scale and up to $55 free postage. Go to stamps.com, the website. And before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the homepage. Then type in ADS, that is stamps.com, promo code ADS.
So Penn Jillette, another one of these guys, it's just
The same kind of guy.
He's just a gifted guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And those guys are attracted to one another. Strangely, women aren't attracted to them. Sad. This week, by the way, in my podcast, motivational podcast, Take a Knee, and I got Phil Rosenthal on, who's, you guys know, very successful guy, created Everyone Loves Raymond. But I talked to him. Everyone else, I sort of, everyone's got the same story. They all come from nothing, and some less than nothing. Nobody's parents did what they do. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, well, nepotism, you know, daddy got you in. They all did something else. And or nothing at all, or they never knew them, you know.
Yeah.
Norman Lear's case didn't know really his parents, but they certainly weren't in the TV business.
Right.
But either way, they just wanted to do something. They had a yearning to do something, and they did it. And nobody knew what the path was at the beginning. They went to school. They somehow found themselves in LA, and it somehow worked out.
That's all kind of scary for me because that's the stage my kids are at. They're trying to figure out the path. And I had a path set out. I was going to medical school. I'm going to practice. Blah, 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 blah. You know, I didn't worry about that. I worried about getting through and doing a good job and stuff. So it's really interesting to see them try to figure that out. I in a way, I don't know if I should push harder in some directions or push less hard.
Well, the thing about the no path, which I think is advantageous later in life, if and you find a path.
That's scary as a parent.
Well, look, if you don't find a path,
you'll find something.
No, I was going to say, you know, your first goal, I think, is to be satisfied. And
I mean, have a good life.
Have a satisfying life.
To me, that goes under the good. Not a good life. The good life.
Well, I don't mean...
No, not the good life.
It's not satisfying, you know, funneling a beer is not satisfying. It's fun or it's whatever, but it's not satisfying.
No,
I would be happy for my children, as long as they didn't ask for fucking money, if they were satisfied. You know, if my son...
And what would that usually include?
Here's what I would say.
What would the top
include?
Three things you would
Here's what I'd say.
Because I think I know what would be
I would say, first off, a job. I'm not saying a career. A job.
A job that gives him a reasonable income.
Reasonable enough for him.
Yeah, okay.
You know.
Okay,
Two. He could work at the YMCA.
Yeah, yeah.
And if he really had a sense of pride, loved to see the kids and the people travel through there,
I'd be completely fine with that as number two. Because number two is actually... Service to humanity, doing something worthwhile for other people.
No, this is his job.
No, but that's that. But that would. I agree with you. It should be in the job, but I just think it's a separate category because it could be also in the job.
All right, just let me tell you my fucking list, would you?
Oh, fuck.
All right. I want them to be gainfully employed.
Yeah.
It does not matter how much they make, as long as they can maintain a realistic lifestyle for what they make.
Okay, fine.
So his job should be a job that he looks forward to, that he likes the people he works with, and he feels some sense of something to it. I don't care what the paycheck is.
Agreed.
Number two, I'd like him to have he or she.
No, she's out. Don't worry about her.
She's on the pole.
Yeah.
I would like them to have a sense of...
I was very impressed when she punched your son at the dinner table. We'll talk about that.
We went out to eat.
Okay, just go
punch
ahead.
Him in the face, too. She's a face puncher.
Yeah, just boom, right at the dinner table.
I would like a sense... I would like them to have something that flips their cookie, such as...
Like a hobby?
Not internet porn. But what I'm saying is I used to fly these model airplanes, and I'd go down to the little model airport in Van Nuys and hang out with these dudes, and they couldn't have looked more satisfied.
Yeah, yeah.
They just were into it.
Yeah.
And they'd be tinkering with the landing gear and setting the throttle, you know, leaning it out and working the ailerons and stuff. But boy, were those guys engaged.
Yeah.
Sometimes they had their son with them. Sometimes they were just alone. They'd get out their big tackle boxes. They were fucking satisfied, those guys.
Nerd.
Well, it's easy to walk past them and go, oh, look at you. You're 44 and you're fucking around with this, you know, plastic, you know, Zero or P51 Mustang, you know, that you got from the hobby shop. To these guys, very important.
Yeah.
It satisfied them.
Okay, okay.
So that was something that...
Okay, so those are the category. What else? Give me one more big one.
I would say family.
Yeah. Okay. That's it.
Then you're done.
That's it. Then you're done. That's right. I think those are absolutely, and people don't, I don't know if that's what people understand to be the priorities. I don't know.
No, and when I say family, I mean relationships.
Yeah.
And, you know, friends, neighbors, all that stuff. And the ability to begin new relationships as you go along. I mean, think about all the people you've met in the last 2-3 years that you would call a friend now.
Yeah.
You know, at this ripe old age. You know, these people that come into your life, you end up spending quite a bit of time with them.
You're talking about Gary and Chris, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about I have people that
spend
work
a lot of time with them.
People that work here. No, we do. We go out,
we
travel together, we go out after the show, we have a beer, and I consider them friends. We enjoy each other's company. I always fucking pay, but you know,
they
other than
tend to enjoy it?
No, I have the
job.
Guys who
it's
work at
be
the other shop. I got Nate over there. I did a Newman doc. But
everyone pays their friends.
Do a movie with somebody, and you'll
friends.
Be married to them for that time you're doing. You do a movie with somebody, an independent movie.
Yeah.
You'll spend more time with that person than anybody else in a month, the months after.
I maybe missed that you said this, but you're talking about the editor, director, both?
It's just the guys you make the movie with.
Yeah.
You'll meet people and be thrust into a relationship with them immediately.
TV, same thing.
Yeah, but it's even more intense because TV kind of goes on in perpetuity, if God willing.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like, you got 19 days.
Yeah,
you
got
to get all this shit done in 19 days.
I see.
So it's a lot of moving.
Yeah, yeah.
Picking up and moving.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't realize how much go from here, go to there, pack it up and move it over there again.
Yeah, yeah.
At least in studio, theoretically, you can just hunker down in a studio.
Yeah.
But that's what I would wish for them. That being said, if Sonny gets a job at the Y and plays with model planes, I'll kill myself.
That's the irony of all this.
But that's all we need. And the thing I talked – now, the thing that's interesting about you
– me.
Well, it's not interesting. But versus Phil Rosenthal or any of these guys I spoke to, but Phil Rosenthal. Now, see, interestingly enough – oh, Drew, here comes a dig.
Uh-oh.
A preemptive sniff. In terms of the path, the preordained path,
yeah,
that a man or a woman has,
yeah.
At the top, there's you. Your dad's a doctor. You went to a prep school.
Yeah,
it was a foregone conclusion unless you had some sort of serious head trauma. You were going to be a doctor yourself. I don't know when your dad decided that, probably right as your head was peeking out of your mom's vagina.
I think it was a function of I was excelling in sciences and growing up going, Daddy, I'm going to be just like you. Now, mind you, I chucked all that for a couple of years.
Either
whole
way.
Story.
You want to go whoring, you go whoring. But the point is
that was later.
The point is, at the top of the food chain, Daddy has a very – look, when you're Henry Ford,
yeah.
Edsel Ford's going to take over at some point,
yeah.
Your son. That's the top. And you're going to be a doctor. Your dad was a doctor. You know, that's the top of the food chain. The bottom of the food chain was RZA from Wu-Tang Clan. You know, yeah. Projects, 10 brothers
Pitbull,
and sisters,
yeah.
No dad. But he knew at age 14 what he was doing.
Yeah.
He was out spinning and doing whatever he's doing in the streets. He knew what he was doing.
Right.
So it's funny that the top of the food chain and the bottom of the food chain at least think they know what they're doing. Early on,
yeah.
It's the middle guys that are kind of bouncing around.
Yeah.
You know, Phil Rosenthal was a middle guy, so he ends up working as a security guard at a museum, and then he manages a deli, you know, after college. You know, doesn't know what, you know, there's
I would argue, I don't know if you got this out of him, but I would bet that people that find really interesting creative paths are synthesizing parts of themselves. And those parts may not be obvious to them when they're young, and they're sort of pulling their strengths together along the road, and then if they see something like that, the kind of that's it. They kind of grab at something.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
That
it's really about people being willing to be creative, understand themselves, and take risk, and synthesize these parts, and not take, you know, one part of myself. I'm feeling a little – self-preoccupied about this because, you know, my thing was I'm not fully – just being a physician, like I feel like there's something more. I feel like I should be doing a little bit more. About, you know, is there were other parts of myself not being expressed. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, this mm-hmm. radio thing, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Let me see if I can do the doctor thing through this other creative outlet. So it's a synthesis that yeah. really becomes satisfying, speaking of satisfaction.
Well, as far as your kids go, I think, at least after talking to Phil, gets a job as an overnight watchman at the Museum of Natural History and then goes to managing a deli in New York. I mean, could you imagine?
Yeah.
One, he's literally sleep. He got fired for sleeping on a bed that was 300 years old. Like, one is literally sitting there 2 a.m. in a natural history museum. Yeah. There's no less action than that. And then you go, if anyone's ever been to one of those New York delis.
Oh, boy.
It is especially the Chinese fire drill in there, or lunchtime, whatever. Yeah. So stuff's going out. People are coming in. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah. So being able to have those experiences before you then have your final calling or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
That's an important thing, I think.
Gary, we got to get take a knee. You got to get Ryan Holiday in here. Be perfect for this, right? Perfect.
Yeah. He's a great ball player. Riz actually was last week's guest on Take a Knee. But anyway, the question for Phil is, Phil's the happiest guy I've ever met.
Huh.
Super happy guy. But yet meets with lots of disappointment, just like everyone does
in this
business. No, I love being around Phil because he's such a positive, happy, you know. We should eat. We should eat something good. You know, that's his whole thing. I mean, I literally went on a mandate with him in New York. We just, you know, he's just one of these guys. You should have John's Pizza. You know, we went down to the Village. I think it was John's. Had a couple of slices. Went and had some, you know, Italian ice. And then went up on the Rays Parkway there and walked.
Oh, isn't that pretty now?
It's beautiful.
It goes all the way to the Hudson Yards.
Yeah, that's the High Line, I think.
Yeah,
it's called
the High Line.
Walked that thing for 4 miles.
Yeah.
Just awesome. By the way, as every step I took, I just got more angry at L.A. because I'm like, see, this is what you do. You take some infrastructure that's fallen apart, that's an eyesore, that can't really be repaired, that's going to cost millions to remove, and you make lemonade out of it. You make walkway,
let me piss you off even more, which is let's not look at something old and just go, oh, disgusting, eyesore, old, must be destroyed. How about there's some beauty in that they created this. You can't see it maybe, but there's beauty hidden in that. Let's bring it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part that pisses me off. That's the 70s. Mm-hmm. Old, bad. Mm-hmm. Remember all that? How much shit was destroyed in this town because of the 70s?
Yep. All right. So Drew and I had a nice, got some time in over the vacation. Phone calls, if and when we get them.
Do you want to do phone? Do you have any calls? Want to do calls and then if we have time?
We'll weave some in.
We can do the Lowry's visit next show if we want.
Lowry's is the steakhouse they have the beef bowl at. Brian.
Hey, Adam, Drew, it's good to talk to you.
Hang on 1 second.
Beef bowl sounds like a gay bar.
And I was going to say.
It's not.
By saying Lowry's is the place to have the beef bowl, you're not clarifying what Lowry's is.
I want to make it clear.
Yeah, it's not.
The Rose Bowl teams
right.
come in every year since probably the 20s or 30s and see who basically consumes the most prime rib.
Yeah, which team?
Eventually, like, PETA's going to get together with the folks from Huffington Post and shut it down. Somebody's going to chain themselves to the front door or something, you know. Somehow. That's a tradition that's just too good. Bunch of big dudes coming in from the Midwest and eating a bunch of beef, right?
Yeah.
Somehow that's going to go away 1 year?
I can imagine.
Your kids won't enjoy that festivity? Something, right?
Yeah.
Somebody's got to stop this, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be on somebody's list of things to get rid of. I just picture a long list, like in Jean Garofalo's apartment, of shit that I like that she wants to get rid of. She's X'd off, like, smoking on the beach.
Listen.
Now she's going after the beef bowl.
Football's on her list.
Oh, no.
I'm sure.
That's right. All right. Brian?
Yeah, hey, Adam, Drew.
Hey.
Hey, my question is, when I surf the internet sometimes, I tend to do these like Google image searches, and I end up looking at pictures of like dead bodies or accident victims, things like that. I don't do it every day. I do it maybe once or twice a week. And I think I just do it out of curiosity, but I do get some kind of feeling just from looking at these pictures. And, you know, you can see anything on the internet these days, and sometimes they're pretty gruesome. I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts on that.
It sounds, feelings. Yeah, it sounds to me, I mean, there is such a thing as morbid curiosity. I mean, we all know that term, but I think that's it's an actual thing. And I think I don't know for sure. I don't know. I can't sort of quote research line and verse on this, but it feels to me like it goes in the same category as scratching a scab. Humans have a tendency to irritate themselves, to do things obsessively. Do you kind of have OCD? You're a little bit in that zone?
I don't think I have any like physical attributes, but I do have a little bit of OCD.
Yeah, and so that in one of the aspects about OCD that people don't talk about is that the obsessive behavior stuff on some level are gratifying. There's a gratification that comes with doing things that are unpleasant sometimes or repetitive, or you know, your reward system is going off. That's why you repeat it. And even though it's very much like a drug addiction, you know, that when the reward system goes, your brain just goes, do that again, do that again, do that again. And you don't have a lot of control over that if you have certain proclivities in your, you know, temporal lobe and prefrontal cortex and stuff, which is where you think this all goes on.
Brian, if I were you, and first off, it sounds like you're speaking, maybe you're underselling your enthusiasm for this activity, but I would take it as a personal challenge to not do that.
Well, just like anything else in that category, like skin picking or anything
know,
else.
They know what they're doing, because personally, I'll go look up like race footage. Sometimes I'll go to YouTube, and if you want, you can go to YouTube and you can see my in-car footage from one of my races, but I'll go look at other guys' in-car footage to see what the track's like or to see how they're doing, or just because I enjoy it. There'll always be a box on the lower right that says, you know, horrific crashes. And they want you to click on the horrific crashes because you're going to see a whole bunch of horrific crashes. But I don't click on it because I think to myself, I don't want to be thinking about horrific crashes when I'm racing a car. I'd rather focus on the guys that are doing it right. I'm aware that this exists. I don't need a bunch of these images in my head.
Right.
And I can't do anything to undo them or fix them. I'd prefer to watch images of guys that are doing it well or where the outcome was good than fixate on this. I always see the box and I always kind of go, don't click on it.
But Adam is right. The way to break those behaviors is to stop them. And to, just like any other behavior that you don't like, you've got to go cold turkey.
Yeah, Adam made a lot of sense on that last one.
Yeah, in Adam's case, it was cold jerky. But
that's right.
Right.
All right, Brian, you sound fine. I just feel like we all know there's so much out there. There's compound fractures and beheadings from ISIS and all that kind of stuff. You understand it. It's out there. Do you need to see it? Do you need to, you know, I feel like I've heard of abortion. I don't need to see abortion, you know?
Yeah.
I get it.
There are things that I think this goes under the category. There are things that, and I'm going to use words, you can argue about whether I should use these words or not, but there are things that enhance your soul and things that don't.
Yeah.
And maybe deplete it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just generally good for humans to do things that enhance their soul. It's a good thing.
Well, look.
It's a better life. Back to a good life thing.
Look, people want to live in a house up on a hill with a great view. And when you sell a house, you can get an extra $500,000 if it has a great view. Hell, out here, depending on what part of Los Angeles we're talking about.
God knows.
The difference between that exact same house on a piece of flat land or that piece of land with a spectacular view could be $3 million. Well, think about the view. You never go on the other side of the window and run down the hill with your arms flapping in the air, you know, sucking in the view. You just look at the view.
Yeah.
There's really, you're just in your kitchen or out on your and your master bedroom or wherever you are, you're looking through a piece of glass.
Yeah.
There could be a piece of duvetine or brick wall or something, or just a light source that created the same amount of light that was coming in via the view.
Yeah.
So what difference does it make? Well, it makes all the difference in the world.
In terms of your soul.
Yeah, in terms of what you're seeing. People go, well, what's the difference? Well, the difference is you're taking all this in versus taking in the side of a stucco apartment building with clothes drying on the railing.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't want to turn this into Germany, but if I was mayor
of what?
This town.
Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I would pass a street-facing balcony ordinance. Because there's plenty of parts of this town that if you drive down, you know, Normandy Boulevard or you drive down Sherman Way, you see everyone's life basically out on the fucking balcony. It's like clothes drying.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a fucking some broken down kids' toys. Nothing worse than a plastic castle. It's been fucked up. There's like, you know, a miniature bicycle with a flat tire. You know, there's just everything. There are too many people in the apartment and they started to shove stuff out under the balcony. But as you drive through that gauntlet of people's poverty and neuroses, it starts to bring you down a little.
Yeah.
I mean, you can crank up the classical music and the air, but you still can't really avoid that. Now, my policy would be if you live in the back apartment, do whatever the fuck you want. If you live in the side apartment, do whatever the fuck you want. But the one facing the street.
We have some ordinances.
Well,
The mayor's made a policy.
Could you hang a Nazi flag off of that?
Yeah.
What would the answer be?
No.
No. Why?
Yeah.
It's offensive to people.
Yeah.
Well, this is offensive to me. Like, it's bringing me down. It's not making me feel good. Now, you could say, well, what's up with the Nazi flag? It's not hurting anybody. It's like, no, it is. It's hurting people emotionally.
Speaking of things that enhance, I know it drives you crazy, but women seem to get enhanced by flowers.
Mmm. That's why you go to thebooks.com. Beautiful, modern, rustic bouquets. Flowers cut the day you order them. I love that. I mean, could you get them to last any longer? You cut them that day. Grown in mineral-rich soils on the side of an active volcano. Those guys are heroes who collect those flowers, man. Lava pouring everywhere. Rocks dropping from the sky. Uh-huh. They grab those tulips and those roses, those daisies. Shipped directly from Ecuador. Close to the equator, close to the sun, it means they're awesome, awesome flowers. And eco-friendly farms, it's all good. It's flat pricing, no upselling, no hidden costs, always free shipping. So whatever you see on the website, that's what they send you, and there's not a bunch of ups and extras. That's it. Valentine's Day is coming up. Get 15% off. Visit TheBooks, TheBooks.com. Use the promo code Drew and Adam. Deal expires January 27th. So let's get on. Get on it.
Yes. Down to the point where I can read your mind a little bit. I like the way I was watching you when you're like, why the fuck is he bringing up flowers? Okay. I can see the. I'm either going to get angry with him or figure this out.
Yeah. That is an interesting. Thing where, you know, that thing where people can't tell what's going on. Like when you talk to your wife and you say, we'll do 126 times, and she doesn't know that means you went off the phone.
Yes.
But we've all had that thing where I've sat down with Mike August and talked to a guy who does radio consulting, and he's just gone, well, terrestrial radio is dead, man. And I was like, come on, Mike, that's what the guy does for a living. You know, it's like somewhere around the 18th time he said it was dead, I want to kick him in the shins. Now, that's just Mike being Mike, but there's people that don't get which way the wind is blowing. You know, like just that thing where, you know, when you say to somebody, it's like when someone is trying to leave the party. And they go, well, the sitters, blah, blah, and the kid, we got an early day tomorrow. And then someone goes, oh, the guy, we were just pulling them, you know,
you
the
cake out of the oven.
Yeah. Like just. Yeah. Not
there's a reason
where the person wants to do this.
Yeah,
that's the answer. That's the answer. All right. Some more phone calls here. What do you got up there?
Let's just go right down the line.
All right. Go to line three, is it?
Yeah.
Mike, 46, Philly.
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Good.
Mike, what's up?
So on the board there, I just want a little bit more of a nuanced response on the nightcap. They had that, and what you think about it, they have the throwaway article every year about how it affects the quality of your sleep and all that. And I'm sure it's like a quantified thing, but I don't know, a couple days a week, or I guess it's about quantity and how many times you do it, right?
Well, okay, so let's state what was probably in that article. He's asking about late night alcohol consumption mm-hmm. as a, quote, nightcap. Now, Adam has to take it. Mm-hmm. Let's be fair.
Mm-hmm. I have a condition.
He has a condition. Mm-hmm. But alcohol will help you fall asleep, but it does a very poor job of maintaining sleep. In fact, it screws up sleep latency, and you'll wake up typically within 2 hours or so. There'll be more arousals with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a fact. And yes, how much you take affects, how much it helps you go to sleep and how much you're likely to wake up later.
Is there better alcohol to drink?
I would imagine, based on what I hear from people, things that have a stimulant kind of quality, like tequila, not good. Mm-hmm. Right? People always talk about that quality they feel. I don't know if it's real or not.
I don't – by the way, the people that are like, oh, you drink tequila and look out, and you drink or I mix tequila with vodka. I'm different than most people, but I have never
– It's all the same.
It's just booze. Yeah. Booze is booze. And the reason affected by tequila is because you don't drink tequila at somebody's house after a wake. You know what I mean?
Right, or
you're not
at somebody's
Saturday
dinner.
Night yeah. when you're out and you're celebrating somebody's divorce or something, and you get fucking shit faced. Yeah. But you do the same thing on vodka.
I think that's probably right.
If you wanted to,
yeah. So what is your concern? I don't quite get it.
No, I'm just curious. It seems like they have that every year, and I definitely partake. And you can do your multiplier, but honest, it's just sort of like.
What is that? Tell me, Mike, hold on. Tell me what that is. I didn't see the article.
Oh, man. It was like right around New Year's.
Buzzkill, man.
Yeah.
Well, the best way to prevent a hangover is not to drink. Douche.
Yeah.
I can hate those articles.
It's like the thing they put at the end of the news reports and stuff. But what I was interested about, Drew, is so you're saying it actually decreases the amount of time, not how tired or not tired you are when you wake up?
Well, obviously, if your sleep is disturbed, you're more tired when you wake up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's about the sleep. It's about the later stages of sleep that are disrupted, and you may not even you woke up. May have just had arousals. It's not good sleep hygiene. It goes the other way. I'm not saying you can't do it or shouldn't.
Well, let me ask you this though, Drew.
Yeah.
You take someone like me of hypervigilance.
Yeah.
I've never really just been able just to go to sleep.
Yeah.
I can't just go to sleep. I got to have earplugs, an eye mask, fan blowing, couple glasses of red wine, couple of three. I got to knock myself down.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't just go to sleep. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how tired I am or how long I've been up. That's just who I am.
Yeah.
So for people that have a disturbance, so to speak, that don't sleep, I mean, I'm insanely jealous of people like you and people like Jimmy, for that matter, who I've got on airplanes with Jimmy, and while we're taxiing, went like, well, this should be a bump, and looked at him, and he's asleep.
I've seen you do the same, but to be fair, it was after five Bloody Marys.
Yeah, but we're not even taxiing yet.
Yeah,
just the ability just to conk out. And Drew always says, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, but you don't get it. For those who don't sleep well, being tired just strings you out even further. It doesn't make you sleep well.
Right.
Yeah. So for somebody who's basically self-medicating, but this is how they've achieved their good night's sleep, what would you say to that? Or would you say go talk to a physician and get on some medication?
Yeah. There are better ways to solve that problem.
Like what?
Trazodone. Toronto, things like that.
Wash that down with some booze. Sounds awesome.
That there are things that, you actually get a formal sleep study and see what's going on and try to affect it.
For me, it's just always been hypervigilance.
I understand, but there may be parts of you, maybe you're one of these people that only needs 4 or 5 hours of sleep, and there are ways to maximize the sleep hygiene during that time.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I wish I was.
But maybe you're not now because you're getting shitty sleep hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so who knows? I don't know. There are usually better ways to deal with it. But listen, you're bringing up one of the treacherous qualities of making statements about people generally, which is, you know, we are biologically very, very different. This is why certain diets don't apply to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, everything has to be evaluated individually to really give you a thorough and accurate response. Maybe they'll decide alcohol is sort of okay for you. I don't know.
I wonder if I'm sure the doctor recommend.
Well, no. Listen, if you come in and go, what do you normally do? Let's recreate your normal thing.
Right.
And then compare it against treatments, compare it against not doing any alcohol. Maybe that's the most efficacious. I don't know. The facts are, you know, the proof's in the pudding.
Let me ask this. I've always looked at – I can't really be hypnotized either. And I've looked at it as the same gene, the same
aspect, yeah.
Part. I wonder if there's any connection between being easily hypnotized and also sleeping easily versus not in the other.
Probably.
It's like I would minus my earbuds and my matte eye shade and the ceiling fan and my 3 glasses of red wine, I just find myself lying on the fucking bed just thinking.
Yeah.
You know, like can't shut it down.
Which, it's something interesting occurs to me, Gary. We should get a hypnotist into Dr. Drew Duck show podcast. I'll get more details in these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. All right, someone's got felony convictions.
All right.
And let's ask Scott.
Gentlemen, get it on. Happy New Year.
Get it on, man.
Hey, Adam. Just a quick sidebar. I want to say thanks for the Catch a Contractor. Great show that shows that people that just because you're some monkey with a tool belt doesn't mean you're a quality contractor. So.
Guessing Scott's in the trades.
I am.
Heating and air?
General contractor.
Mm-hmm.
Started heating and air?
With an emphasis on HVAC work?
Light electrical. Mm-hmm. No HVAC. No. Mm-hmm. Restoration contractor.
Ah, that's nice.
Yeah. My question is, I have a wonderful girlfriend. Both have our stuff together. She's actually a physician in her residency.
Nice.
She's Italian, and
we've
been together about 6 months. Everything's great. You get to that age where, hey, you got your crap together, want to settle down, she feels the same way. Parents came in about a month or two into the relationship. Everything went great. And about a month after that, her mom did a background check on me and saw that I had a felony conviction about 10 years ago when I was young and dumb. White-collar crime. No drug or violent offenses, and
parents are going to be doing background checks.
Oh hell yeah!
Oh, true. Wait a minute now, Scott.
I got some questions.
White collar crime,
but you said a boot.
Yeah,
and you're in St. Louis. What's that all about?
Oh, transplant from Minnesota.
Okay,
all right. So yeah, we had Canada or Minnesota.
Yeah.
And then white collar crime, young and dumb is you punching a cop's horse,
correct.
You know, not white collar crime.
So this,
I'm sorry, Drew, I didn't mean to.
I'm just imagining you did some real estate, transaction that went bad.
Well, why don't you let him tell us?
But I've essentially been self-employed since I was 18, grew a couple businesses, sold one, and I had some equipment that was leased. A landscape company. And so when I sold the company, Adam, I'm sure you know, when you're in a business, you lease with a dollar buyout. I had a year left on the agreement, but when selling the company, I sold off all the equipment, paid off the remainder of the loan with the exception of $5,000, which was when I sold my company, I was getting 3 payments. And I said, well, I called the company, hey, I paid off. $25,000.
That doesn't sound like a felony.
That sounds like a big pile of nothing to me.
Like a felony.
It was.
Where's the felony?
It was.
What was the felony? Fraud?
It was the felony for theft of leased equipment.
Okay.
You can't,
all right. Look, it can't. Look, let me say this. As a parent, as a father of a daughter, when the wife says she's going to go on the computer and check this dude out who my daughter's dating, and then comes back into the kitchen and goes, "We got a problem. We got a felony conviction 10 years ago, but we got a felony conviction." Not returning leased equipment for landscape work is not even on my spectrum of of concerns.
Right.
You know, top is, you know, some battery and arson and, you know, aggravated assault.
DUIs.
DUI somewhere in the middle.
Drug trafficking.
Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Not returning a rototill.
Well, I think that's why
it's not even on my list.
I think, though, he prefaced his story by saying the mom's Italian. Like, she couldn't sort this out.
And the dad's fine with it.
I put this in the lap of your daughter. I'm sorry, of her daughter, who unfortunately Italian moms don't listen to their daughters. Does she have a brother?
That's the problem we have.
Does she have
two brothers?
Oh, good.
Yep.
Treats them like kings, right?
Yes.
Not so much the daughter.
She's very
culture.
Sheltered.
Okay.
The mom.
How is your relationship with the brothers?
Now they think I'm some sort of pond scum because mom goes and tells everyone that I'm a felon.
Here's what I know from the Italians. Here's what I know. I'm Italian, but I don't know anything from my family. Fucking losers. I mean, we don't have, you know.
No
people
family.
Are funny. It's like, oh, your dad's Italian. Must be very passionate, man. Passionate about fucking napping. You get hold of the brothers, and the brothers go to the mom.
Yeah.
You tell the sister.
You got to get a brother on
the brother's got to say, look, hey, mom, listen. I understand you see felony. Understand what we're really talking about here. Be like, remember I leased that Jetta a few years ago? It'd be like if I didn't give that thing back on time or something. It was 10 years ago. Come on.
Yeah.
She's not going to listen to
the
daughter.
But why did he cover it up? Why did he not tell us?
She's not going to listen to the brother.
The cover-up is going to be what he's going to have trouble talking
about. There's no cover-up of something that happened 10 years ago.
I understand, but the point is he should come clean about the stuff up front with everybody all the time.
All right,
because people hate the cover-up.
Last one. Kyle, look. No, don't come up. You don't walk up to the parents and go, I have a felony conviction that's 10 years old on
unleased
equipment.
But I wonder if the daughter knows. See, the daughter may not have known. That's the part of the problem.
Kyle?
Hey, long time, first time. I've been listening for about 5 years, and I've noticed you've never once talked about your bit part in Art House, the movie Art House with Chris Hardwick.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into Chris Hardwick about a year and a half ago at a thing. He came to town and shook his hand, and I said, hey, you never talk about Art House. What's going on with that? And he kind of played it off like he was, I would assume he's embarrassed about it because he was definitely drinking at the time, and I know he's embarrassed about that.
He's not embarrassed. He talks very openly about that period and his recovery and stuff. So I don't know. Was there something about Art House, Adam?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Is something about the movie or something he would be embarrassed about?
No, I think you're maybe reading a little too much into Chris Hardwick's stuff.
Yeah.
Here's my thing. I talk about the same thing over and over again, and then there are things I never talk about for no reason. I don't have a copy of it. I don't remember it as being something I'm particularly proud of, although I don't remember even seeing it. I'm not saying it's bad. What I'm saying is 18 years ago, somebody, Chris Hardwick, said, you want to do this thing after K-Rock, and we went over to some place in Glendale and knocked it out in a few hours. It was very hot. That's, of course, as it always is. And then I went home and forgot about it. But listen, I did Wreck-It Ralph, and I didn't know what the fuck it was when I went and did it, and then I just went home.
Yeah.
You know, and then like 9 months later, I was like, we're doing what? There's a premiere? What's going on? But I don't know how many times you heard me talk about Wreck-It Ralph.
Never.
It's the same thing. It's just there's stuff that's on my mind and stuff that's not on my mind. That this is just one of them. It's nothing personal. There's nothing that I think about. I really don't have a collection of had bit parts in movies and stuff like that. I don't have
those. And if you want to hear Chris talk about his alcohol history, I did his podcast, I don't know, 6 months ago or something, and we went into great detail about it. So he talks about
But he has a thing where he talks about that that portion of his life, it's almost like it was another person. You know, I think he refers to it as Peter Hardwick or something like that.
I don't know. I mean, we did this. This is he was pretty young when we did this. I don't think his alcoholism was in full bloom. If that
came later, yeah,
yeah, he was 24 or something.
No,
it wasn't.
Came later.
It wasn't. He kind of got into it later. So he was young. He wasn't. He didn't count himself an alcoholic. It's not like we were standing on the set and he was hitting off a flask or something like that. I mean,
he got pretty bad. Oh,
sure.
He got pretty far
I'm
down.
Sure he got pretty far down. You know, many lightweights do.
Yeah.
But no, I'm sure he did. But this wasn't it. I think you're reading too much into it with him and possibly with me as well.
And read anything to Adam.
Sure.
Always inadvisable.
I've been listening for about 5 years or so, and I've heard you talk about the Dawson's Creek thing a bunch, and I thought, I wonder why.
Well,
he was pissed.
Dawson's Creek is going to. Well, yeah, you have to understand. Now, come on, Kyle. Dawson's Creek has a story. I mean, first off, Dr. Drew was in it with me, so we have that. If he was with me on the set of Art House, it might come up. But point is, Drew is with me, and boy, do I have a fucking story about it. You know, them telling me to charter my own plane and the marathon circling my house being able to pick
you
up.
You standing out in the rain screaming at me?
Yes.
Screaming, remember that?
No, I don't even remember that. All right, listen.
I need more than 20 grand to get out of bed next time. I can't fucking believe I'm here for you.
All right, Kyle, stop reading things into things.
Okay.
All right.
All right. By the way, if you want to get you some Mangria, go to Fuel Retail Store. It's inside the Hard Rock. I'll be signing some bottles. That'll be Saturday, January 17th, 5 o'clock before the show. You can subscribe at adamcarolla.com/archive. You want to listen to some Take a Knee, and I think it's important. CorollaDrinks.com for a little Mangria, if you like. And Catch a Contractor, Season 3, now casting Catch a Contractor. So you got a shitty contractor, Los Angeles and Vegas. Go to CatchAContractor.com. And, yeah, I hit that one already. PayPal, Dr. Drew. Hit the PayPal button. Give a little juju. It's good juju. All right. So until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew, Chris Maxpata, Gary Haftard. Saying, mahalo.
This is Corolla Digital.